today. How are you?
I was thinking about our topic that we discussed, and I'm kind of sitting in that a little bit right now.
Yeah, I am as well. So this feels like a very fitting topic, and our topic we're going to talk about sitting in the discomfort.
Sitting in the discomfort. I think it's very important to know that even though we are positive, growth-minded human beings, that we also sit in the muck sometimes. And
Yeah.
we are in the middle of, as we know, Mercury retrograde until the 25th. Like, why does it have to be this long? So buckle up, buttercup, right?
And eclipse season.
And eclipse season. So yeah, a lot of raging light workers, healers, and people who don't even know why they're feeling crazy at the moment, but it is what it is.
It's interesting to watch because I felt pretty grounded, but seeing the energy around me, just like even this week, I posted on my Instagram stories because laughing about it because near my house there's a five-way stop intersection,
Yeah.
and I use this five-way stop intersection every day and never have troubles using it, but for some reason the other day, people just didn't know how to use it, and we were like sitting there waiting my turn to go, and people are just like getting so mad at each other and like flipping each other off and like doing the stop and start thing. And it was just like so laughable. And I had to go through this intersection twice. And I finally was like, I'm gonna go around this area because like someone's gonna get hurt because people were just being so chaotic.
Totally. It's
So
so
just like really watching out for like everyone has high tempers right now because we're also in Aries season and it's like
it's all about
tempers and
isn't that like all about relationships and stuff too?
well, Aries is like action and less about relationships, but it's more like about like communications right now, like with the eclipses and the retrogrades, like relationships, communication, and it's all in Aries, which means people are getting hot-headed. So
Nuts, nutso, right?
been crazy, yeah. But like what you're saying, like when you're on a growth journey, discomfort is a big piece of that. And I think people have this common misconception that when you go on a healing or growth journey, it's like all love and light and peace and like positivity and manifesting and like fake it till you make it. But the reality is that like the real healing and growth comes from
The discomfort.
the discomfort, and we have to sit in the muck. And like I think my favorite analogy is like clean out the basement, our metaphysical basement.
I call it sediment in my body.
Yeah.
Like I just have to let that sit so I can just scoop a little bit out at a time and, allow myself to move through it. I'm a big believer of absolutely taking the time though to sit in the discomfort of it, because within that, for me, I really find where the aha moments come from, where the moments of like, oh, this is how I can better serve myself, or this is how I can better serve my partner, or my friend, it's like, or my, family member, whatever it needs in that moment. But I think, moving your body really helps with the discomfort.
Yeah, it does. It can help move energy through. I'll say that for me, for the longest time, I was kind of a control freak. And that was because of childhood trauma where so much of my life was outside of my control, that as I grew up, being in control of everything made me comfortable, because then no one else could bother me or affect me. And so, but becoming an adult, there's so many things in life that we can't control, and that's uncomfortable. And I used to try to run away from the discomfort because I wanted to be in control and I wanted to feel okay. And the discomfort is unknown, and that's scary. That can be really scary to lean into.
Yeah, especially like I remember when I was first on, it was after the divorce, and I was really leaning into therapy and really leaning into the spirituality piece and really trying to understand what the pain of the or the discomfort was attached to. And was it because I there's like several metamorphoses that go on after a divorce, after spiritual awakening, after, I mean, I can imagine for my later in life friends, like after they come out, also there's a whole other layer of discomfort and all this new ways of like walking through the world and feeling kind of lost at times. And for me, after the divorce, the metamorphosis really was, or the shedding of lots of skin, and recognizing that one, you can't control what other people do, say, react to what you say, what things like that. Kind of regulating my body to now know that I'm no longer in a unhappy space, toxic space, however you want to claim it for your own relationship. I think every relationship becomes toxic at the end. I think it just, even if you try to do it as amicable, it just, before you get to the amicable piece, or the piece of the understanding and the taking ownership of your, it's a toxicity that is just running through your skin. And so it took me almost 2 years to finally kind of come out of that. And that's a long time. Like I would, and I had moments of like, whoo, I'm done, blah, blah, blah. And then, something whacks you on the head again. So I think I'm okay in the discomfort when I know where it's coming from. When I finally identified it, I can then sit in it, cry through it, get emo all about it or whatever. But at least because there's the release of, or the relief of now knowing like where it comes from.
Do you think that's because you now have the tools to understand so that when you start getting uncomfortable? Because I know for me, looking back,
Yeah.
when discomfortable things would come up, but when that feeling would arise, it would cause almost like a panic for me, and I would do everything I could to get away from it
Yeah.
because I didn't understand it. I didn't understand the purpose. I didn't understand what was happening. But really, I didn't understand what was happening within my own body, my own system, my own brain. And the more therapy I've done, the more self-growth I've done, the more tools I've collected in my toolbox, I'm now in a space where discomfort happens frequently, uncomfortable times happen. But now I have the tools to, instead of like my system going into panic or collapse when that discomfort happens, I'm able to sit back, recognize the feeling, recognize the space, and then say, okay, what's at the root of this? What's causing this? What's underneath this? And that has been so helpful because I know even today I'm sitting in discomfort because there is a situation happening with my kids and the other parent that I have no control over. I'm aware of what's happening, and I my hands are tied, and I have not, there's nothing I can do other than prepare for my children to come home and know that I'm going to be handling intense emotions for the next week and dysregulation. So this discomfort for me is like, I can't control this. I can't fix this. I have to sit in it and then use my tools to keep myself grounded so that I can pour out to my kids when they come home. But I don't think I would have been able to do that even maybe a year ago. It took a lot of system regulation and being able to recognize like my feelings, my thoughts, my experiences as kind of almost in a way external from that grounded self. And if I can come back to grounded self, then I have the tools to deal with all of those things. Does that make sense?
It does actually. I mean, yeah, I mean, we, the reason why we, so utilizing the therapy and tools, and hopefully, you can pull from that and utilize it depending upon what's going on. But even so, let's just say totally single, right? Like if you're totally single and you're doing your work, things aren't going to really pop up until all of a sudden you're in a relationship with somebody else or started the dating. And dating will bring up a lot of anxiety for people. It'll bring up triggers. And sitting in that discomfort of getting to know people, that's where having the tools in your toolbox helps.
You know, I think it's one of those things where you just don't know, like when you're dating people and going through and going on dates and stuff, that it's going to be triggered. It's, you know, that you're going to be uncomfortable in some of those moments because you're just getting to know people and you don't know exactly all their, you don't know them like your best friends in that sense.
Yeah, I had even so I decided to embark on dating apps again recently. And I had an interesting thing come up last night that was uncomfortable, just even a moment where I got to use my tools. So I'll give an example of having a lovely conversation with this wonderful human. So far has been really, really lovely to talk with. And we're having conversation, and out of the blue, this person said to me, "Would you be interested in chatting on the phone at some point in time?" And it was really uncomfortable for me because in the past, when I've given people off of dating apps my phone number, they have immediately become super creepy, super gross, and it was just a really bad experience for me. So sitting in the discomfort in this moment of like the little bit of like the recovering people pleaser me not wanting to be like no. But then also me feeling uncomfortable with giving out my phone number to someone I haven't actually met yet. So I said, you know, hey, you know, thanks for asking. But in the past, I've had a really bad experience with giving out my phone number to people from dating apps before we've met publicly. So I prefer not to give my phone number until we've had an actual date in public in person.
What did they say?
And they said, "Oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought about that. That's a great point. I totally understand."
How lovely.
And
That's
we
amazing.
proceeded to
It's
continue having a
amazing.
great conversation. And so I use my tools, I use my voice. I sat in that moment where it was like it was a little triggery for me because it reminded me of like I was like, "Oh, if I give this person my number, they're just going to start being a creeper." But then I had to like calm myself and be like, "Okay, no. I'm just going to speak my truth with this person and see how they show up." And they
Yeah.
were like, "Awesome."
That's amazing. I love that for you. I mean,
Yeah.
it's you and you never know what's gonna and when and what you're gonna get uncomfortable about until it's literally standing in front of you.
Yeah,
That's the crazy
exactly.
thing is like you have to give yourself grace in that moment. And I think what I'm learning is to not respond immediately. I think the tool for that is just to take a pause. And if you need to like walk away from your phone for a second, because whatever that was, it's you have to remind yourself that person isn't saying anything to you to trigger you. They're just literally saying something or asking something or whatever the formula is, right? It doesn't giving them the benefit of the doubt, I think, is really important in that moment. And then just saying, whoa, I felt triggered by that, but this is my response.
That's where I feel like, you know, the not reacting, it's like react versus respond. So like when we react, it's like that instinctive just fly off the handle. Like whatever you're feeling directs how you respond. But when you take the time to go in first, check in, and then respond, that is so helpful because that, you know, like
Wait,
a
why are
sense
you
of
laughing
inner.
over there? Because you're just, is it like an aha moment for you while you're going through this or no?
No. This is something I've been aware of, but I was just like thinking back to your relationships where it's like, especially in like the lens of relationships, people have so many miscommunications and arguments that happen because they react versus respond.
Yeah.
And I just like think back to my own relationships where it's like, if I had paused, even when triggered, if I had just paused, sat with the discomfort and gotten grounded with myself and checked in with myself and then responded, it makes me wonder, like, how would some of those situations have gone differently?
I'm curious, the discomfort around the idea of you being back in a relationship and like, you know, someone continues to kind of show up for you. I know today we were talking a little bit about certain, like different attachments and things like that, just on our phone call. But how are you going to feel? How does it make you feel? Like, I know you want a relationship, right? Like, we don't need a relationship, but we want companionship and love and connection. Are you really ready for that? Or are you ready for the idea of a relationship? Or are you ready for just getting to know people to see and sort of gauge how ready you are?
It's interesting because,
and we didn't talk about me asking you that. Like, I'm just asking off the cuff. Like, just so people know, like, this is how our phone calls go. Like, this is how we typically do it.
This is how we converse. I love it. It's organic.
Yeah.
You know, like I was telling you in our phone call earlier, it's interesting in regards to attachment styles because I used to very much be that like very classic anxious attachment style. Chasing, not giving space, like all of like worrying, looking at the text all the time. Oh, they haven't messaged me in a couple of hours. Like, are we done? Like, you know, like thinking the worst, all of that. And I have done so much work and healing around that now I'm realizing I've kind of gone like the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Where I'm kind of avoidant now. And I'm not entirely sure yet if that's like genuine avoidance of I'm not emotionally available or if it's just feeling uncomfortable in my new space of how I approach relationships. Because the last connection that I had with someone that we were exploring relationship, I was definitely more of the emotionally avoidant one in that it was like, it's hard to imagine totally opening up to someone again, giving away my free time, my freedom, and being in partnership again. And while I desire that, I think that I just haven't experienced a healthy partnership in person, like in my life on a consistent basis. So I'm not totally certain if I'm actually emotionally avoidant or if I'm just like, it's the uncomfortable unknown.
Yeah.
And I have to sit in it. Does that make sense?
It does. It's scary, right? Like it's scary to let your heart be open, but we can't be in relationships without being heart open. And the understanding through that is you can do everything you want to do to reassure and protect yourself and reassure yourself, but reassure, you know, the other individual or lay it out and say, this is kind of how I show up. And as long as my actions match, then that will be met with consistency, obviously. But it's interesting because, and I was finishing this attachment book because I had paused in at a specific spot in it. Just, you know, like I read like 7 books at a time. So I'm like, I need to go back to this, you know, because we're talking about it on the podcast and it's just, it comes up a lot in my feed, you know, because of the therapist I follow. And of course, I just want to keep learning because there comes a time and there will come a time where you meet somebody special and they're not coming to you perfectly secure attachment as well. Like I might be secure attachment, but I also show, you know, a little bit of anxiousness if there isn't clarity around. Like I'm very, very clear and about how I need to be met. I make it like easy blueprint, like to understand me if you really want to understand me. But it's like I was talking to Samantha Fox, right? Mm-hmm. Lesbian Curiosity
Coach. We love Samantha.
Love her. And I won't divulge anything of what she and I talked about just out of courtesy of our friendship. But one thing that I find is that there's such a fine line of chasing versus holding space and creating a tether without the expectation of the person needing to respond in any sort of way. And the former codependent in me, when I do that, and I say former because even though I still see through the line of my people pleasing ways, I walk through it differently. I don't just, and I think it's that whole thing you just said, which is react or respond. And it's really crucial when we are in all those spaces, because all of us show up in some form or way of that. And at some point you have to give people the benefit of the doubt and give them the space in which to feel safe and share and be able to be communicative in that space. But you have to go, like, there's no way around it. I'm always going to meet somebody who's either anxious, avoidant, codependent. I mean, like, all the things. Like, everybody is going to come into a dating scenario with issues. It's just really comes back to the day that comes back to you in the sense of, is this person important enough? And do you feel like there's enough here, like how we've built a foundation or how we show up for each other, that it's okay for you to learn about that person in this space?
And I think even more so too, like, I love what you just said. And to add to that, I think that especially like in terms of dating, it really comes down to self-awareness, because we all bring shit to the table, but are we self-aware enough about it to be able to respond versus react? And something Sabrina Zohar, one of our favorite podcasters, says that I love, you know, specifically talking about the attachment styles too, is like, I think there's this common misconception. She talks about this, that like, doing the work around your attachment style doesn't mean that it's gone. Doesn't mean that it's, that you're done with that, moved on, don't have that attachment issue anymore. But what you have is the awareness of it to be able to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Exactly. And just communicate it to whoever you're interested in dating. Because in my 20s, I definitely was probably anxious and avoidant at times. I mean, it probably ebbed and flowed depending upon like who I'm in partnership with at that time, who I'm just dating or whatever, right? Because everybody brings out something different in you. And depending upon how that person meets you, it's amazing how surprising you can be to yourself and how you show up. You're like, I've never showed up like this with anybody, or have I wanted to? But in my 20s, I would dip and dodge and then just blame it on the fact that I wasn't ready for a relationship, when in fact, I wasn't ready to connect in a deeper, profound level because I was scared as fuck.
Yes. Yes.
And absolutely. And now I'm not scared. Like, I am not scared to get my heart broken. I am not scared to put my heart out there. Doesn't mean that I want to get married tomorrow. It literally just means that if I'm choosing you today, that I'm all in today.
Yeah. You know, going back to the question you asked me about where I'm at with dating, I think in response to all of this, it's like, I think that where I'm at is that I haven't had the opportunity yet to put a lot of my work into practice, the work I've done for myself. So the discomfort is not knowing how I'm actually going to show up in a relationship, like when I have a relationship, because I haven't had the relationship yet that's been different from the past.
Right. So, okay. So, scenario, you meet somebody who, because you see how I show up for people now.
Yeah.
Like, and like even Michelle said, I am so fucking proud of you. Like, from last year to today, like, you know, she was just telling me that I'm inspiring her. And I love when my friends say that. It's like, so, I don't even know what to say. Like, I just get very like, thank you, you know, like, it's so genuine and sweet. So if there was somebody who showed up the way that you know I show up, like for you, how would that feel and look?
I honestly, looking ahead to the future, I think it's going to be pretty uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
I really do think it is.
Yeah. Thank you for being honest.
Yeah, because, and I say that because, I mean, I have gotten to practice this a little bit, because like the last person I connected with was totally, I want to add this, because I said, no, I haven't had a relationship that's been different from the past. But this last person I connected with, like, we were totally different countries, and so we weren't able to be in person, but we were talking about meeting and talking about having a relationship, and so we got to practice a little bit. And I did notice that when this person continued to show up consistently for me, it was uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do with it, because my narrative has been for so long that men in particular don't show up, that they're all word and no action. And so I can't trust their words. But this person had the words, but also had the action, and I could trust what he said. And we're still friends, and he still shows up for me in some ways that I'm like, oh, okay, I see what's possible. But I still, it feels uncomfortable. It truly does, because my system, that's not a normal experience for my physiology, my body, like in my body, that's uncomfortable. Because I grew up not having parents who showed up for me, and not having, you know, anyone consistently in my life in childhood that showed up for me. And so my system only knows, that experience. And so it lived in like fight or flight and abandonment for so long that it's like, I've done all this work to retrain my system within myself as a single person, and I have yet to be able to truly put that into practice in relationship. So I'm very curious to see how that shows up for me in my next relationship.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be fascinated to see how it shows up, because I'll be on the other end of that phone and, you know, obviously talking you through stuff, or just listening and letting you bounce ideas off. I think at the end of the day, is like, being chosen is one thing. It's that when you're saying I choose you in that way, of it's allowing you to say, cool, that means we're on the same page. That means that we can talk about things and practice on each other, you know, also, like, it's giving a safe space to practice on each other. Because I mean, I think one of the things that Sabrina always says is that people dip and dive so fast because of they freak out and they don't even give things a chance. She said, if I just freaked out and didn't give tech guy, you know, a chance, I wouldn't be here with him at this moment. Like, and so there's obviously a catch 22, or there's like a teetering moment where you don't want to, you're not giving yourself away. As long as you're not giving yourself away or withdrawing or not being your whole self, I think that's when you have to check yourself in that sense of like, is this feel healthy? Is this feel good for me?
Yeah.
I think you have to do that a lot. And I don't feel like I have the desire to just check out anymore. Like, if I find somebody I really like, I just want to lean in and see how long that can go, but also do things differently by expressing differently and giving the benefit of the doubt instead of
taking it on as the people pleaser or the anxious person and being like, it's about me, or, oh my God, what didn't I do? Or just verbal diarrhea all over it, which is what a lot of anxious attachment people do, where I don't do that anymore. So I feel very glad about that.
Yeah. You know, I love the concept that the discomfort is where we grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back to that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in terms of dating, but just in terms of life.
Totally.
If we run away from the things that are uncomfortable, we're losing an opportunity to get to know ourselves more and to grow. Is truly how I view it. Yeah.
And the thing is, that's what I was saying. It's like, I don't want to dip and dive because then I miss the opportunity to learn something new.
Yes.
Regardless, it's a win-win. Whether you get the relationship you always dreamed of because you put in the work and you got comfortable in the uncomfortable, or you do the things and it doesn't work out, then you learn new things for the next time. You might get the opportunity to try things out.
Yeah.
That person is different and that person might have a new reaction and you're learning another new way. So for me, it just feels like a win-win at the end of the day.
Yeah, it does. So we had some questions from Instagram questions and feedback around this. So should we share those?
Yeah, let's do that. It's perfect.
Like a good time. Okay. Let me pull them up real fast here.
You got it. Yeah, it's just so fascinating going through and learning people.
It is.
And friendships too. I mean, and friendships also. I mean, those are not, you make a choice to choose each other as a friend every day. I think people don't realize that.
Having uncomfortable conversations with friends
mm-hmm.
Versus being passive aggressive about something that you're feeling or want to express, mm-hmm. you know, because I mean, I had a moment like that with a friend this last year where they were feeling a certain way and I could sense that they were feeling that way and neither one of us were bringing it up. And I was kind of giving this person the space to maybe bring it up if they wanted to, because I could see and feel that they were feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally did bring it up. And then we had this beautiful conversation because I was able to hold the space for it and acknowledge how they felt and discuss it and not be attacked by it or feel like I did something wrong. And we just had this beautiful conversation and it took us to a new place in our friendship. And we've been friends for 10 years and it took us to a whole new level of our friendship. Yeah. And, you know, we could have both, like she could have sat with that for so long and let it fester and then like blow up and we could have never been friends again. But like, we both used our tools and chose to be in the discomfort together and work through it.
Well, I think just like relationships, like I had two people here in Arizona from the Lilies group literally text me. I don't know. They kind of texted me within 2 weeks of each other, which I thought was really sweet and fun, but they both literally said, Michelle, every time we hang out, we have so much fun. I really want to I want to have a friendship with you. Like I need friends. This is what I would love. And I feel like we get along so great that, and they really made that choice to like, mm-hmm. I want to be friends with you. I think people don't do that as much as we should. And letting people know that, like, I want to be in this.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Okay. I've got questions ready here.
Cool.
So I'm going to do this one first. I love this. So this is actually coming from someone who's going to be coming on our podcast to share their story at some point in time.
Cool.
And this person said, it's been hard to share my full story. Being vulnerable and seen triggers me. Yeah.
Ugh.
That, yeah. I
Oof.
Completely relate to that so deeply. This is something I went through in the last, like, I'd say 6 months when I took my social media break.
Yeah.
And talked about a lot with my therapist because I got to this point where it was like, it's so uncomfortable being seen and mm-hmm. sharing our stories sometimes. And it was really, I've always received a lot of positive feedback from my audience about around sharing my story and being vulnerable and being seen. But I wasn't comfortable with it yet. I was like, when I would share something raw and vulnerable, I would post it and then immediately go into a triggered state and have to like shut my phone off. And I would just like melt down. Because I was so worried about, oh my gosh, like I said something about my divorce. Is this going to get back to my ex? Is he going to blow up my phone? Or, you know, are people going to judge me for what I just said? You know, are people going to think that I'm a terrible human being because of what I just said? Are people going to, and this is the biggest one for me, are people going to poke holes in what I just said and call me out as being less knowledgeable than I think I am?
Imposter syndrome and
a
lot of comparison going on there for you.
Yeah. And I've had to do
social media. Social media does that. I mean, there's a lot of comparison. Remember, people are just showing their best sides a lot of times. And when you do show your vulnerable side, then you are now they're comparing themselves to you. And also with all these different attachments, what I read in the book today is that it's very easy for people to say, I can't give you what you want because of X, Y, Z, but when you're in that uncomfortable space for yourself, you forget to just say, hey, when I do this, how does that affect you? Like, that's such a different way to approach that instead of taking it all on yourself and being here, right? Being in your head and like making a whole story and a narrative surrounding what that would feel like. Like, let's just say you were in a romantic relationship and you said, I want you to know me and I want to feel fully seen. It takes me a little bit of time. And if you're patient with me through this, I'll show you my whole self. Like I want
you know what a great example of that literally is the Rich Roll podcast when he and his wife did that episode together where she literally said to him on the podcast, and it was for the people listening, it was an uncomfortable moment because she said to him, I want to know you fully.
And they've been married 23 years.
Exactly. And he, you could feel his discomfort and you could feel him sitting in it. And he sat with that. And he even said, like, I don't totally know what that means. And that makes me feel uncomfortable, but I'm committed to you.
Right. That's what he did really well there because that was a vulnerable moment for her to say that. And at first when he was talking, I was like, oh my God, he better say he's like, I was invested in that moment. Like he better not say he's dipping out. Like they're at the end there, but no, he said, no, I mean, you could hear it in his every breath. You know, just saying exactly what you were saying, which was,
they saw each other.
I don't know what that looks like, but I'm only going to, like, you're the only person I'll allow to do, want to go through this with. Like, he's like, I'm still here for that.
And speaking to the, like, the sharing of story and feeling triggered around sharing story, it's so hard. I think especially for women, we're so conditioned from a young age to not be seen. I mean, I grew up conservative, you know, Christian religious, where literally children are to be seen and not heard.
Heard, that's very typical.
Very typical, you know, and especially as girls, we're told to be quiet. We're told we're too much. We are told that, you know, we need to be calm and mellow and adaptable and, you know, make everyone around us feel good. And so we hide who we are. We stuff it down. And so then when we're given opportunities to be seen or heard and people value what we have to say and our perspective and our story, that's deeply uncomfortable. That's deeply triggering because, again, coming back to that, like the body stores, you know, everything, like our bodies physically react to that because we don't know what to do with it. And so I know for me around like sharing vulnerably, especially on social media, I've had to come to a space of recognizing that my truth is my truth. And I get to share my truth. But then also other people get to feel how they feel about my truth and respond or react. And a lot of times, like, especially you see, you know, people who share vulnerably on social media, they get like a lot of trolls making comments or poking fun of them. And it's like, those people are reacting to you. And
they're
it has
triggered.
Absolutely, they're triggered. They're triggered something in them. And that is not your responsibility.
Correct. I mean, even, you know, when you're talking to people or when I'm reading this attachment book, because I'm learning, I learned a lot in these last couple of chapters, but it was really, and then bouncing some of those things off of Samantha and just saying, is this, you know, does this feel true, you know, in this sense, like for the people that you've talked to and who you work with. And it really comes down to it is that you only need the safety piece in it with another person to say and show up in a safe way. And if you are going to hold space for somebody, or if you are going to let them be uncomfortable, because not everybody wants you to fix that uncomfortable place. Like, it, you have to be curious and ask lots of questions in a way that doesn't feel defensive. And going through those uncomfortable conversations, just as sitting with yourself does, it's amazing what the clarity can do for both people and how you can, you know, sort of step into that in a space together. And I think that's where relationships thrive. I mean, the laughter is great and the sex is wonderful and fun. But the intimacy happens through those conversations, and nothing else can happen beautifully or happen magically without having those conversations. And if one of our listeners is out there right now and they are, you know, with a partner currently, married, and if they've been married over 10, 15 years, don't forget to look at that person again with fresh eyes and going back to the drawing board, going back to the basics of how you started your relationship off. The fact that you're still there is amazing. To just go back and check in with each other on any uncomfortable topics, or, you know, asking your partner for a grade in how you're approaching your relationship. Like, hey, as a mom, how do you think I'm doing? A through F. Like, putting yourself in a vulnerable place can enrich and deepen those relationships.
Okay, so that actually like segues really well into the next
perfect
question from Instagram.
Yeah, what was that?
So this person said, speaking to the discomfort, how to sit with the discomfort in regards to family, for example, cutting out a toxic family member and then holding the hard boundaries with the person when other family members are involved.
What would you do?
Yeah. You know, this is something I've done a lot of things around. my mother and I have not spoken in, it's been a while since I've counted the years, but it's probably been about 18 years, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, since I think the last time my mother and I actually spoke in person, I was 18 and I'm turning 36. So,
Wow. 18 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, at one point in time, the decision was primarily hers. I was excommunicated from my parents' cult that they were a part of. And when that happens, you are not allowed to speak to your family. Like, you're cut off from them, you're cut off from God, you're cut off from the church, and they basically go no contact. But my parents had maintained a little bit of contact here or there. And my mom would do this thing where she would every like 6 months or so, she would like send me a letter in the mail expressing that she couldn't talk to me still, but that she was really hoping and praying that I would come back to God and that we could have a relationship at some point in time, that I would confess my sins and come back to God. And at a certain point, the conversations that we did have were so frustrating that I realized I had to protect my peace and I had to hold my boundary and not engage because it felt pointless at that point in time. And I've had similar situations with other family members where I've had to really hold up some boundaries around the way that I'm spoken to, the way that I am interacted with, the way that my children are interacted with. I've had to have those boundaries with in-laws before. And it's hard because, especially for those of us who are people pleasers, like the last thing on earth you want to do is cause discomfort within a family unit.
Yeah.
Because I think we're taught as children that like you have to avoid the uncomfortable in your family as much as possible. You know, shove it under the rug. We don't talk about it. We don't address it.
Don't cause a stir. That's what my
don't make problems. And you know, the person that I married has a family that is a large family, and that is very much how they do things. They don't address issues, but they're passive aggressive about it. And I had a point in time where I had to set a very large boundary with the mother-in-law, and it caused a lot of ripple effect in how the rest of the family treated me going forward. But I was the only person married into the family who had the balls to put up the boundary that needed to happen. And so I think I would say, you know, if you see a boundary that needs to happen with a family member, set the boundary, but know that you're probably going to be treated differently. They're going to react to you. They're going to react to you versus respond. And your other family members are probably going to react to you versus respond. Yeah. And so how can you maintain your peace? How can you maintain your sense of self? How can you stay grounded in your truth?
Yep.
Knowing that they also get to feel how they feel, but that doesn't mean that they get to treat you poorly, is what I think that's the biggest piece of advice I would give about that. What about you?
I don't really have much to add on that. I mean, I think you covered it. It's my throat. Hold on. Excuse me.
You're all good.
I have water with me, but it's just dry here in Arizona. I think it's just really important to continue to know yourself and to learn yourself and also to give yourself grace in those spaces.
Yeah.
We always have to come back to saying, you know, our families and how they did or didn't show up. If you're over the age of 30, you have a chance to step out of that space.
It being a cycle breaker, I think anyone who has to set, you know, hard boundaries with family, especially, it's usually because you're the one who has enough self-awareness to be a cycle breaker and to call out the bullshit that your family's been sweeping under the rug for a long time. And that's a really, really hard space to be that person. So, I mean, honestly, I don't know if, I mean, I feel like if you're going to set boundaries with someone and cut out toxic family, make sure that you're supporting yourself with therapy, you know, or friends that you are able to talk with and just who can affirm for you that you are, you know, speaking your truth and maintaining those boundaries, because it's a really hard thing to do on your own.
Yeah,
I would say.
I mean, and I think you have to know your family. Like, there is going to be certain family members that you can talk to, and there'll be a shift. And there are going to be times where you talk to a family member or a parent and they do not meet you where you are. They literally, you know, like show you who they are still. And at that point, like I said, if you're over the age of 30, that's when all this kind of starts to bubble up, because you've had a few relationships, or maybe you're newly married, you're about to have kids. Like, all these things rear their head when you become vulnerable in another space. Because a lot of that growth and a lot of that, like what you want to fix, doesn't show up until you're in partnership, where
you see your partner living their life with their family. And a lot of times we attract what we want, right? So we attract a great partner and the closeness that they have with their family that you crave. And a lot of times it's just that way. So you have to decide on now, like, do you want to have that really close relationship with your in-laws? And that becomes where you fix things and realize that your parents may not change, your family may not change, but that you now have like this other source of care and, you know, and love that supports you and your partnership, hence kids, whatever it looks like. Because at the end of the day, it's really our internal fight with ourselves and internal stuff of do we really want to heal or not? I mean, that's at the end of the day, like you just have to ask yourself, do I want to heal through this?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to continue to run to, I mean, cause that's really what it becomes. It's like, do I want to sit in this or do I want to avoid it? You know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you know what you're saying about attracting, you know, speaking to in-laws, like as someone who didn't have a great family life growing up,
yeah,
one of the things I had always wanted to have was a partner who had close relationships with their family, like a healthy yeah. family dynamic and a big family. I always, because I came from a big family, I'm the oldest of six kids.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of cousins and, you know, both my parents came from big families and, but I saw this big family that was really disjointed growing up. And so my like fantasy was that I was going to have a partner who had this big, beautiful family where they were all close and they lived in the same area and they all yeah. the cousins grew up together. So then when I met, you know, the person I married, from the outside looking in, that's what their family unit was like.
Mm.
And I mean, I'll never forget like the first holiday I spent with them, I very quickly realized that what I had seen from the outside looking in was just the outward presentation.
It was all a mask.
It's all a mask. And
yeah.
And so, you know, as I got to know them more and more, like I ignored a lot of red flags with the family.
Yeah.
Because I was wanting to grasp onto that fantasy of having this big happy family unit. And so I allowed the family to treat me in some really terrible ways because yeah. I just wanted to maintain that fantasy.
Totally.
And so now, you know, looking back, like one of the things I put on my list, you know, we were talking about lists last week and the list for manifesting a partner. One of the things I have on my list is, you know, to really, when I am dating someone, to ask crucial questions about their family life,
yep.
their family relationships, like, and then meeting their family, like really paying attention to how does their family interact with each other? How yeah. do they treat each other? How do they show up for each other?
Yeah.
What are their bonds like? Because
one person's definition of close is like, oh, well, we talk once every 2 months. That's close for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they, you know, hang out or they do a dinner every now and then. And that just, I mean, that might be their representation of it. So I think it's also understanding the questions to ask yeah. in those beginning phases of like, well, do you like that? Or would you want to talk to them more? Like, I think again, getting curious is not, that's where discovery, as Sam and I were talking about, dating is really just about gathering information.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
100%. Okay, so our last question.
Yeah.
And I love this question. I think it's a beautiful question because it came from a human man that I adore.
Yeah, totally.
He messaged me and said, can you think of a time when sitting with discomfort ultimately led to a positive outcome or personal development? And I think, you know, we've shared so many examples already in this. And yeah. so I feel like maybe we've kind of answered that question a little bit, but I just, you know,
I think it's like a good journal. Like, I think it's a good journal prompt.
Yeah, I think it's a great journaling prompt. And so I'm just going to like ask you, like, can you think of like a specific where you had to sit in discomfort and it led to growth that you could visually measure and see the outcome of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think within my friendships,
I'll use Chrissy as an example because she never minds. She will know that I am maybe in a source of discomfort, and she'll also anticipate the rabbit hole I'm about to go down because of our because of the long friendship, right? Like I know when you're feeling anxious, like we can pretty much, you know, sense good friends. Yes. And hopefully if you're in a really connected relationship, you kind of know when your partner is about to like go off the deep end, right?
Yeah.
But as far as like me being in full discomfort, she decided to layer more discomfort on top of me, which in retrospect, and it was like 4 hours later, I recognized it because of, I'm just really proud of myself in that. But I texted her and then she called me right away and she goes, did I overstep today? And I go, actually, at first I was really pissed at you, but it forced me to make a huge shift in, I mean, like in deleting stuff that I didn't need to read anymore. I mean, like a whole thing that absolutely changed my day and changed in how I was reliving these, you know, like the circling of those, of the nonstop self-talk that's like detrimental, you know, where you're just, it's negative self-talk. And it literally shifted me out of it. I still am like amazed by how all that happened and how her tough love in that moment. So she met me with more discomfort, but it turned out epic. It was exactly what I truly ended up needing, that the narrative was not going away. I was ruminating in the same narrative. And I think we all do that. We all have that narrative, that self-talk narrative.
Yeah. I love that so much because as you were saying that, I was thinking about how truly, truly the best friends in our life are the ones who aren't going to placate us.
No.
They're going to see our discomfort. And, you know, I mean, I have friends who will say, like, even this morning, you know, when I called you upset, you were like, do you just want to vent? Do you just need to let it out? Like,
what do you need from me in the moment? Yeah. What,
yeah, what do you need? And I love that because it's like, you know, in some of the spaces of my biggest discomfort are times when I've reached out to Angela, and Angela, I love that she does this. She doesn't placate or, you know, just have empathy.
Right.
It's asking critical questions that help me get back to myself.
Yeah.
So I can discover what the discomfort's about
and
get out of, like you said, that loop of self-talk and negativity. And it gets me back to that place where, you know, the questions, like Chrissy said to you, and then Angela says to me, putting extra pressure, extra pressure is like a pressure cooker, you know, and extra pressure on top of the discomfort so that we can actually leave the discomfort faster.
Yeah. And what's crazy about that is if our partners do it, I'm just talking for my marriage. If our partners do that, it feels like they are judging us and criticizing. But when a friend does it, it's really based on, again, the whole space of the intention behind the friendship, the intention of how you approach somebody, but it's all comes from knowing and giving the benefit of the doubt to me has been very important in life because there have been times where I have not been given the benefit of the doubt and it feels like shit. So I always will give people the benefit of the doubt until they prove me otherwise.
Yeah. You know, something you just said, I really love.
Yeah.
You know, to add a little pressure to the conversation.
Yeah, don't worry.
You know, partners putting that pressure on us. I look at my past relationships and I would agree with that. In the past, if a partner had put that kind of pressure to my discomfort, I would have felt judged, or I would have felt triggered, or I would have felt called out in a way that wasn't like redeemable. But I will say the person who asked the question that I just read is someone that I had considered relationship with, and you know, we're very deeply connected.
Right.
And one of the things I valued and appreciated by him so much was that he put those pressure points in moments when I was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And instead of feeling judged, instead of feeling unsafe or feeling criticized, it actually was very inspirational for me.
Yeah.
And it helped us to have the kinds of conversations that helped us move through the discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to add to what you said, that I think that when you have two people who are self-aware and are on growth journeys who come to relationship together, I think it's fully possible for them to do the same things that our friends do and putting the pressure on us.
Yeah.
And that's what I look for and I'm craving in a relationship, is to have someone who understands what it's like to be in the discomfort and be able to ask the critical questions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have those conversations.
Right. I mean, I think you're always going to be judging and criticizing yourself. Like, we all are hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think it's just finding friends, people, your lovers, whatever, your part, your spouse, your significant others. I think at the end of the day, I think that's why the term is you want to marry your best friend, because how we show up for our best friends / without the physical intimacy, right? I think that's why people use that term, is, you know, you want to, because the way that your friends show up, you want your partner to show up the same way. So it, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of communication. It isn't easy, but man, the rewards are ridiculous. And I think if, you know, if someone's out there right now just thinking about getting on the apps or just about ready to date and do that, like even you, I just would say to you, take the time to get to know each person and give them the benefit of the doubt until they otherwise prove that they don't deserve your energy and time.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before in the past, but you know, going into dating with the mindset that everyone's out to get you or everyone's shitty is what you're going to call in.
Mm-hmm. And I also just urge people to lean into that momentary uncomfortable, and also to register, you know, whether or not, you know, it's coming from a place of triggers and from childhood, or if it's really because that person just isn't a good person for you.
Get curious. I think that's what I'm telling myself in the discomfort. You know, just like even in the situation that I'm dealing with my kids and the other parent today, in the past, my instinct would be to be triggered and to react and to try to swoop in and save the day and protect my kids from their emotions being hurt, to their feelings being hurt by their parent. And rather than swooping in to be overprotective, I'm sitting back and I'm observing and I'm being curious.
Yeah.
And staying grounded and asking questions from a place of not trying to judge the other parent, not trying to put them on the offensive, because if I put them on the offensive, then we can't get anywhere productive. Mm-hmm. And so it's requiring me to be uncomfortable.
Yep.
And sit back and be curious.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I mean, more to come, right?
Always.
Always. And I love this conversation. I hope our listeners get a lot out of it as well, or hopefully something triggers them to pivot and make a little change in their day, or go back to somebody that maybe there wasn't, you know, they're like, huh, maybe that was what it was. Or talk to a friend, you know, that you may have had a little falling out with, and, you know, not giving them the benefit of the doubt during that time because you just weren't in a place of curiosity. I think just staying curious is really, really important.
Yeah, I would say if you're in a space, like if you're listening and you're in a space of discomfort right now, whatever that might be, like around relationship, around, you know, discomfort can be like, oh, I'm in between jobs, or, you know, there's a discomfort can look so differently. But if you're in a place of discomfort right now, giving yourself grace and not shaming yourself for how you're feeling and getting curious. And maybe just today, sit down with your journal and ask yourself, how am I feeling? And what's underneath that? Why am I feeling that way? What is the discomfort causing to come up for me? What are the feelings that are coming up? Mm-hmm. And just put it onto paper.
Totally. And you can't make people, they're going to react the way they are. You know, it's like, you just can't put any pressure on yourself around that. And you just have to continue and move on.
Yeah.
Love you, friend.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode today, be sure to subscribe and share, because what do we say, baby?
Sharing is caring.